Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Laps Talk Show, and we'd like to welcome you to our show. Every Sunday night, the Straight Wives Talk Show talks about different issues that affect millions of women in this country and also around the world who have husbands who are gay or who identify as bisexual. And my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss many topics that affect all of us, and hopefully we all learn from that, and hopefully things can, you know, like I said, once the information spreads, hopefully it makes, you know, people more aware and not so isolated and feeling alone. So good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm doing very well. Just really hot in the South Florida, but I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing good, and we're really excited because tonight we have a very special show, and we have some friends who are coming on from the AIDS Services Foundation of Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an organization that works with caring with people with AIDS. And of course, you know, AIDS is certainly something that is of interest to all of the people who listen to our show. And I will preface this by saying that, you know, many years ago when AIDS first started back in the 1980s, as I recall, you know, when I first started hearing about AIDS, you know, so much was unknown. It was such a horrible nightmare because back then nobody was surviving with AIDS. It was definitely a death sentence. And I remember having to take a break from, you know, doing my counseling with straight wives because it was just getting so distressing to me because I had so many women who were calling me who were dying from AIDS. Back then, as I mentioned, people weren't living with it. And these were women who had no idea their husbands were gay. And now not only did they have AIDS, but they were dying. Their husbands were dying, leaving behind orphans. And it was such a stressful time in our society. But, you know, thankfully things have changed a lot as far as medications and people living with AIDS. And we have some wonderful guests tonight from that organization in California, the AIDS Service Foundation of Orange County, who will be here to talk to us. So I'm going to see if we can get them on the line now. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Bonnie.
Hey, Bonnie, this is Kay. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
All right, we have somebody else with us. Hold on one moment. Hello?
Hi, Bonnie. This is Phil Yeager with
AIDS
Services Foundation.
Thank you so much for joining our show.
Absolutely.
And do we have
it's a pleasure to be with you.
Do we have another guest coming?
Yes, Nancy should be on the phone.
Okay. Well, we'll be looking for Nancy. Okay, thank you so much for coming and joining us. And
welcome.
I'm so impressed with the organization that you're running, Phil. I mean, it's just wonderful to read about it. And, you know, it's really funny because I hate to really say a comment that really sounds like really stupid, but I have an aunt who lives in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told her about your organization and how many people it's serving, she was, you know, she's only been there a few years, but she was really shocked.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I guess people think, well, you're in Orange County in the OC. You're not going to be having this kind of problem there.
Right. And I think maybe that's a common misperception, you know, because historically you look at who AIDS has impacted, you know, gay community, injection drug users, and now you're hearing more about HIV and AIDS in communities of color. And
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there I think is a false assumption at times that Orange County is somehow immune, if you will, pardon the metaphor, to HIV and AIDS.
So
clearly
well,
that's not the case.
You organize this organization. Were you part of the organization of it?
No, I was not. The organization,
or you came in later on?
Pardon me?
You came in after it was already formed?
Yes. Actually, the organization was founded 25 years ago. A group of concerned citizens got together one evening and realized that they were seeing something happening in the community. One of those individuals was an infectious disease nurse from UCI, and she was caring for these people with this mysterious disease. And so they wanted to do something to help people, and they got together and formed the agency. And so I joined the agency in 1993. I actually started as a volunteer and would come in one day a week volunteering, and then was fortunate enough to get a part-time position in the food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this was different from my career path that I was on, but it was something that I found to be very passionate about through my volunteer work, and I know it was something that's been.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I think we have a bad echo in your background there, Phil.
Yeah, I'm hearing that as well.
Okay. You don't have a computer on, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I lost the echo a little bit. Well, until we do, why don't we go over to Kay and just talk to her for a moment? Maybe sometimes the phone just has to straighten out. Kay, you're there?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. And I want to thank you so much for bringing Phil on and for coming on yourself. And I think that, you know, what it would be really wonderful if people could hear your story, because certainly the women who listen to our show can really make a connection with that.
Right.
So maybe you could tell that.
Well, Bonnie, I was married in 1989 to a gentleman who I had been dating for 10 years. So we had a long history. We were great friends and totally in love, or so I thought. There were some little things were missing, but I thought maybe that was just because we'd been together for so many years. And we got married in 1989, and in 1991 we got separated, and I decided to go get an HIV test just because it seemed like the right thing to do. I wanted to be out in the single world and have this card that showed you were HIV negative, because I'm in an industry where there are there were a lot of gay men at the time, and there were people dying of AIDS. So I was aware of HIV at a very young age. And so I knew getting tested was the right thing to do. And I went and got tested, and 2 weeks later went back and got my results. And I was shocked when the nurse told me that I was HIV positive, because I thought, that can't happen to me. The test has got to be wrong. And actually I got retested a couple times because I just couldn't believe the results. And
what was your immediate thought when you were told you were positive? Did you immediately suspect it was your husband?
At first I thought, oh my gosh, it can't be. But then I thought, it has to be my husband. It had to be. So it was just a shock, and I didn't know what to do. I went to the library and tried to read up on HIV and AIDS, and there were only two books at the time, and I was crouched in a little corner of the library trying to read about HIV, because I didn't want anyone to see me reading a book on AIDS. And I got home, I was crying my eyes out. I turned on the TV, and Magic Johnson came out that same day saying he had AIDS, and I thought, oh my gosh, the whole world must have AIDS. Magic Johnson has it, and I have it. And I opened the phone book and looked under AIDS, and thank goodness I found the AIDS Service Foundation, where Phil works, and they hooked me up in a support group, and later on it became a women's support group, and it's really given me the strength to carry on for these 20 years with HIV.
Now, what was your immediate reaction, Kay, when you found out you have this, you know, deadly disease? Because back when you found out, there were still many people who were dying from AIDS.
I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I went to the doctor. The doctor told me I had 2 years to live. I was 31 years old at the time. So, of course, I kind of panicked, but I believe in carrying on and doing what you can do. And, of course, there was as a woman, I was at a loss because of the children that I could never have, because they told me I could never have children. I was going to die in 2 years. So actually, I followed my dream. I moved to New York and started traveling around the world, because traveling is my passion. So that's what I did to get over the fear of everything. But, of course, I started eating really healthy and juicing and taking all kind of vitamins and anything to build my immune system.
And medication at that time, right, like AZT or?
Yes, I started taking AZT. It took me about 2 years to start taking the medicine, because I was a little worried about the toxicity of the medication, because I was always like a health nut. But, I was starting to take about 20 pills a day when I started 2 years later on medication. And, of course, I did all this in hiding, because only my family knew. I wouldn't tell anybody else, because I had an experience where I had gone to the gynecologist about 2 months after I was diagnosed, and I told him while I was getting my exam, hey, I'm HIV positive, and of course the tray fell on the ground, the nurse ran out of the room, and it was just a very horrifying experience for me and for the doctor because he was scared to death.
Phil?
Yeah.
I think you could shed a little insight. You know, when I go back to the days of AIDS back in the 80s when it was such a death sentence and such a social stigma, and of course, you know, I followed it so closely, you know, also having a gay husband. But, you know, looking to see how people were treated and isolated, I guess you were really aware of that when you first started with the agency, is that correct?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there was so much stigma. We had clients who would pass away, and the family had no idea what they had died from. They believed it was some form of a cancer. Other times they'd be told it was some other disease that had taken them. And these are family members in the home. And fortunately, there's been some easing of that, but there's still a very heavy and tremendous stigma that still lies around HIV and AIDS. And I think that that's a big part of why we're not seeing people tested and learning their status and talking about their status openly.
I think also that, you know, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I always feel now that because AIDS is treatable much more so than it used to be, that it doesn't have, that people don't have the same fear of it that they had 15 years ago or 20 years ago, where people were overly cautious back then. They're really underly cautious right now.
Yeah,
and
yes.
We have a lot of women who get sexually transmitted diseases besides AIDS. You know, they get everything you can imagine from, you know, syphilis to gonorrhea to herpes, you know, to you name it, they're getting it, you know, because there's just not that kind of urgency, you know, like there was for safe sex a number of years ago. But Phil,
right.
Maybe you can explain something to me because, you know, I just never quite understood this. Is it that AIDS has mutated over the years where people don't get the same kind of symptoms they used to when they would get all the lesions on their body and go blind? And
what
happens?
You know, what we're seeing there is improvements in the medications. So the KS, the lesions on the face, and a lot of the opportunistic infections that would cause weight loss, and a lot of the other opportunist infections were related to the immune system being so weakened. And so with the medications now that are available, they're so much more effective at keeping the immune system in check, reducing, if not nearly eliminating, the amount of virus in the system, and then improving the T-cell count that we always heard about. And those are that's the part of the immune system that helps fight off infection. So because of that, we're seeing people not having to deal with as many of these opportunistic infections, and it's not as necessarily evident that somebody's living with HIV and AIDS.
Okay, let me ask you this question. After you were diagnosed, how did you approach your ex-husband?
Well, when I was diagnosed, I called him on the phone, of course, and told him I was HIV positive. And he started crying, and at that point, it clicked in. Oh my gosh, I know where I got it. Because he was so upset, and I just knew. And
now, did you know he was gay at that point?
I did not know he was gay. No, I knew he had been cheating on me, but I didn't know it was with men.
So was he honest with you at that point?
No, he still wasn't honest with me, actually, and to this day, he still denies that he's gay, but I find that kind of sad, but he's actually a really good person, but I just think some people, the shame of being gay sometimes is even more of a shame than having HIV, and I can feel what it feels like for them to live in a closet, because even with HIV, many of us still live in a closet with that fear of the shame and the stigma. And so I think, unfortunately, some men may go through their whole life living a dual life, being married and actually being gay.
Did your ex-husband ever remarry?
No.
Well, that's good. So let me ask you this. How did finding out you were HIV, I mean, now it's so many years later and you're a survivor and you're doing great. But in those early years when there were no guarantees and they were giving you 2 years to survive and, you know, beating the odds and just living life to its fullest, as you were saying, you got a job where you're traveling all over and fulfilling whatever you wanted to do. But it had to have this emotional impact on you as far as relationships moving along that road, did it?
Yes, the relationship end of my life has not been so great. It's for me, being HIV positive, it's a real risk dating and telling somebody. I was in a relationship at one time with another man who was HIV positive. But in the non-HIV world, it's still very scary for me. Some men are accepting, some aren't. Most aren't. It's been my experience, but I do have girlfriends who are HIV positive, and they date, and men are accepting because as long as you're using 100% safe sex, it's very rare for a woman to infect a man. So,
but it still has to be emotionally overwhelming to have to even go through that with a man, to even have to break that news.
It is, because actually,
it's going to risk your relationship.
Yeah, it's scary. I actually met somebody a little while ago, and we had a date scheduled, and I was so nervous because I knew I liked him, so I wanted to disclose early in the relationship, and I was so nervous the whole day before the date, and luckily the date was canceled, so I haven't had to disclose yet, but it's terrifying.
I'm sure it is. And have you ever dated someone without telling them?
Yes, I have. I haven't had a sexual relationship without telling
right,
somebody.
Right, I understand that.
But
you know,
I have dated... Pardon me?
No, but you know eventually if anything's going to come with it, you know you always have that news to tell.
Right.
So I'm sure that's really, you know, been pretty devastating too. I mean, my heart really goes out to you having to deal with that. I think when I see our women who, you know, get left behind with the sexually transmitted diseases and having to face that now as far as relationships, it always really hurts me knowing what they're going through. Bill, I just want to ask you, in your experience of working at the AIDS, you know, Service Foundation, did you have many women coming in who had gay husbands?
I don't know that we can say gay husbands. I know we can say husbands who at least are bisexual and having sex with men for sure. And where we're seeing that predominantly is in the Latino community, where it's we're finding it's a lot of times women are being diagnosed with full-blown AIDS and are just, you know, absolutely shocked because here they have never stepped outside of their marriage sexually, have always been faithful, have had a single partner all their life, and have never even believed they were at risk for contracting HIV. So
I think a lot of that's true in the Black community too, where they say, you know, men who they call it on the down low. You
yes,
know, they
yes,
and call it whatever
and,
they like. But.
Right, right, and I just think because of demographics, that's why we're not seeing it here in Orange County, because we don't have a large African American community, but certainly in the Latino community, it's very, very prevalent.
Right, but I think that a lot of times with the Latino community, because I've worked with a lot of Latino women, you know, it's such a social stigma to be gay that these men, you know, find it much easier to hide within the marriage and, you know, practice sexually outside the marriage. And this is, you know, because it really is not accepted at all socially. You know, the Latino community really has very strict standards on that. So it's very sad when I'm working with a lot of Latino women who are kind of stuck in these marriages because the families are just so adamant that they stay in them.
Right.
And, you know, rather than have a social stigma of a divorced wife. And, you know, I don't see that changing too much. You know, I've been doing this counseling for 30 years, and on that end, I haven't seen much of a change. But would you say that you have a greater number of women clients who are coming in now than you had in the past, or has it kind of evened out?
Well, it's certainly still predominantly men who we're seeing, but the number of women is increasing. So that's what we're seeing. We've seen the number of women on our client caseload rise from, you know, in the very beginning, very, very small numbers to now up to 12% of the women, or of the clients that we see are women.
Now, how have things changed much for women who are pregnant, who are HIV?
Kay
was saying before that she, you know, was told, you know, she can't have children because she was only going to live 2 years, and I guess apprehension of having children because then, you know, they would be born infected. But how has that changed?
Well, there's medications now and ways to treat women and to prevent the perinatal transmission of HIV. And then at the time of delivery, what they do is a bloodless C-section so that, again, they further reduce the transmission to the child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in the U.S. what we have seen is dramatic drop-off and decrease in numbers. In fact, I can only think of one case that I have now where it's a infant who was infected perinatally within the last 3 years, only one single case. So,
and is that
it's made
because they didn't use the medical treatment while she was pregnant? Or?
It's a very interesting situation where the woman was incarcerated, and
mm-hmm.
the HIV test, something must have, that's where the breakdown was during her incarceration and the supposed HIV test that she received at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they then did not do a follow-up test until at the time of labor and delivery, which is a practice that's being put in place here in Orange County. And at that
mm-hmm.
time, they identified the fact that she, in fact, was HIV positive.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Are there social groups for people who have HIV so that they could meet each other?
Yes, there's many social groups for people who are HIV positive. I've been to a few parties. It's not something I attend regularly, but I have been over the years. They have HIV positive crews. They have a group in San Diego and a group up in Los Angeles. And we have a number of women's HIV support groups that are wonderful. And I can just tell you, being here in Orange County, I know we're talking about some Hispanic and African American, but most of the women in the support groups that I've been to here in Orange County, they are white women, so it affects everybody.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is something that has no bearing as far as economic, social, you know, background, religious. It's from everywhere, correct?
Correct.
The people who are coming in.
Yes.
You know, because a lot of people think, well, it's a disease that poor people get or drug users get, but that's not the case.
No. Mm-mm.
Now, Phil, I was just wondering, do many of the clients that you have coming in, is it from drug-related?
You know what? The number of clients we're seeing who are infected through injection drug use is declining.
Mm-hmm.
There is that we've really done a good job, I believe, in educating injection drug users about this. Where drugs are still playing a role or in impacting the spread of HIV is methamphetamine, crystal meth.
Mm-hmm.
The use of that drug, not only in the gay community where it's very prevalent, but just in society in general, a lot of infections are occurring while people are under the influence of drugs, party drugs like that. And that's what we're finding when we're doing our testing, and that's what we're finding is to be true.
Are they doing it through needles, though?
No, and that's the interesting part. It's not because of a needle. And a blood-to-blood, it's happening because the drug lowers the inhibitions and
mm-hmm.
Increases the sex drive. And so what you have is just a very dangerous mix with throwing caution to the wind, no inhibitions.
So in other words, you know, you're more likely just to have indiscriminate sex because you're using drugs and that's spreading it more.
Yes.
I was just curious that in California, are they distributing needles for drug users, clean needles?
It can happen in the state of California. but it does not happen very often or very widely. Because what it requires is each county has to declare an emergency in order to go forward with a needle exchange program. And some counties and communities just aren't willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. So are you seeing any kind of movement up or down towards, you know, the number of clients that are coming in?
Well, one of the things that we've seen is a very consistency in infections and infection rates. And that's something that the CDC has, you know, really confirmed in the last, I believe it was about 2 years ago. For years, they had estimated the number of new infections in the United States at about 40,000 per year. And what they found is that actually new infection rate was about 56,000 per year, or they were off by about 40%. And so that number has now been consistent for the last 2 to 3 years. So we're not making enough of an impact in our prevention messages. We're not getting that message out there enough to people. And so it's something that at ASF that we're really focusing on doing and targeting that messages, those messages to those highest risk groups. And speaking of women, one of the prevention initiatives that we have in place targets what we call high-risk women, and these are specifically women who are in domestic violence shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And the statistics bear out that women who are victims of domestic violence have a higher incidence of HIV and a higher risk for HIV transmission. And so by going into the shelters, we have a captive audience and are able to reach 12 to 20 women in a single hour and a half session, educating them about HIV, their risk, and how to protect themselves.
Is there a reason why there's so much of the higher percentage of women with domestic violence?
I think you would find women in those situations are obviously less powerful, are being dominated, and are not able to protect themselves, both sexually and physically.
Mm-hmm. So how about, Kay,
mm-hmm.
let me ask you this question. At this point in time, how do you feel?
Health-wise, I feel terrific. I've never been sick. I take my medication regularly. So I am just like a normal person. So I feel happy, and I have hope for the future. And thank goodness ASF is there whenever I need counseling or anybody to talk to. There's somebody there, and I have hope that one day I will be in a relationship again. And it's not as scary as it used to be. It gets easier to disclose. And I just hope that women on your show, you know, if anyone is thinking that their husband might be gay or something might be a little off, I had some concerns. I thought about my husband. I remember years and years ago before we were married, I told my girlfriend, oh, maybe he's just gay. If you think it might be true, and they may be out having sex with men. Like Phil says, maybe not necessarily gay, but there is a lot of SMS men or MSM men having sex with men. So
I call that gay.
Trust anyone.
As you know,
I say,
if you want a penis, it's gay. I mean, sorry, Phil, if that language is strong for you. But
I understand. I just what I was stating is they don't perceive themselves to be gay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Denial's a powerful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we have a lot of men living in that state of denial. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, any woman who is suspicious, I always tell them, if you have any suspicions at all, you owe it to yourself. You know what really hurts me, Kay? It's like when I have women who know that their husbands are having sex with men, and yet they go on to have unprotected sex with these husbands because they want to prove to their husbands that they really love them so much that they're hoping that that love for them will prove that they don't have to go out there and have men. And I just feel so bad when I hear these stories because these women are really putting their life in their hands, aren't they?
Yes, they are. It's very, very risky. I mean, women are so susceptible having unprotected sex with a man who's having sex with men. It's just so easy for us to become infected by a man. It's much less for them to be infected by us, just the way the body works.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, the condoms aren't that bad. You can get used to them. And I would hope all of the women on this show would get tested, because thank goodness I was tested. Thank goodness I tested early, and I've been on medication, so I've been able to live a normal life, because I would have ended up at ASF, like Phil says, with many of the people who never got tested, and they show up with AIDS, and then you're so sick at that time. So the medication has kept healthy and strong, and I'm just glad that I got tested early.
Phil, can I ask you this? Maybe you can answer this question. If you have a husband who has HIV or AIDS and you don't have it, is it still possible to pass it on to the child?
You know what? I don't believe so. But I have to tell you, I don't know that for certain. But
No, I was just curious because I was wondering if it could be spread just through the male, or if it has to be through the female.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's a good question, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a very good question. I don't know if science has that answer.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because then I would think there'd be maybe a higher, you know, rate of infection for children. Because, you know, you could be a woman who hasn't been infected, but it's still possible, I think, for your child to be infected.
I've only heard of mother to child through child's birth, and then through breast milk, but never a child being born through infection from a father where the mother was not living with HIV.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure about that. And another thing that maybe both of you can address, I know that a lot of the women who first find out about their husbands are really first going through the trauma, first finding out they have a gay husband. But then, of course, I'm very quick, and so are the members of our support groups, to tell them, you know, go get tested. Don't live like an ostrich with your head in the sand. You know, you have to know. Can you tell people, you know, exactly it's not a big traumatizing test, correct?
Oh, correct. The test is very, very simple now. What we do is an oral swab. So a swab is rubbed on the inside of the cheek, placed in a solution, and within 20 minutes, we have a preliminary result.
Wow.
And I say preliminary result because any preliminary positive needs to be followed up with a secondary test for confirmation.
And what if it's a preliminary negative?
Preliminary negative shows no evidence of HIV antibodies in the blood, in the saliva, in the system.
So now women don't even have to wait. They can on a preliminary result, right?
Correct. You can find out within 20 minutes. And we offer this type of testing at our offices, and we also go out into the community and offer it at various venues and locations, health fairs, and really trying to normalize testing. It is so important. Exactly what Kay mentioned about the good health she's enjoying now because she began to treat very early. And that is one of the new things you'll hear coming out of the international conferences on HIV and AIDS is test and treat. There was belief before that perhaps it was better to wait to begin medications and to begin treatment, but now what they're finding is that is not the case. It is much more important to reduce the amount of HIV in the body, in an individual's body, because that has been proven to reduce the amount of infectiousness of that individual. So in essence, the less HIV virus you have in your community, as you're able to bring that viral load down with an individual, your community is that much safer and less likely to get HIV. So,
and once again, we're on with Phil and with Kay, and if anybody does have a question, you can feel free to call in. I'll give you our call-in number in case you have a question for them. It's area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that again. Area code 646-716-4893. Or you can email me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to present your question to them. Phil, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think I kind of cut you off with that.
No worries.
On your last thought. But also, here's what I wanted to know. This is how you do it there in Orange County. Would this be pretty similar to how it's being done around the country right now?
What is that, the testing?
As far as the testing?
Yeah, the testing is available across the country, that 20-minute oral test. It just depends on the location. It's a much more expensive test than the other type of test, which would take 10 days for results. So not every community will do it. And what some communities are actually doing is a preliminary screening, and if the individual is to believe low risk, they may do the other type of test that takes a 10-day turnaround. And for someone at higher risk, do the more immediate test so that they have an immediate answer upon leaving their the testing site.
Well, let's just say theoretically in some little town they don't have the expenses of doing it, you know, by the saliva swab. Is it normally like a blood test that they would be doing?
Yeah, they may still be doing that, may still be doing the blood draw. Well, there's also the finger prick where it just takes a drop of blood with the test before, if you will, the oral test that came out. So it can be done with very little blood.
One of the reasons why people are so afraid to go is just the waiting time they think it's going to take to find out.
Right.
And
yes.
That's why I think it's wonderful if you can get back a result that quickly.
Yes. One of the things they found with the older form of testing is that 30% of the people never return for results.
And I can understand
this way,
that.
Yeah, so this way people are walking out immediately with their results.
Mm-hmm. For better or for worse, at least they know.
Yeah.
But I think that today, as you mentioned, that there's so many different things you can do for treatment, that it's not the same kind of social stigma that it was 15, 20 years ago. Or, emotional. It's still traumatizing, but at least you know that you can take something. And, Kay, do you speak to groups as a role model of how you can live your life as a healthy person?
Do I speak to groups, did you say?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I go out and speak to colleges. I have in the past. I haven't done it for about a year, but I used to go out and speak to colleges and high schools and even some junior high schools about what it's like living with HIV. And many of the kids are just shocked because I look healthy, I look normal, and because I've spoken with them, a lot of them have gotten tested, and a lot of them are using safer sex, so I'm really happy about that because they see that it can happen to anybody.
Have either one of you noticed a trend with teenage sex? Has it increased a lot over the years? Are you seeing younger patients coming in, Phil?
Well, yes. It sounds like we have that reverb. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you good.
Okay, great. Yes, one of the things we were seeing is youth. 25% of all new HIV infections were happening in young people between the ages of 20 and 25 years old. And that is just absolutely alarming. And I think as you talked about the lack of concern around HIV, 20 years ago, 44% of the population thought HIV and AIDS was a very serious health concern. And today that's about 4%, which is just so alarming. And I think because a lot of youth see people living longer, they're seeing Magic Johnson doing well. They're seeing people doing well, so they think, okay, this is not a big deal. It is just simply a pill a day, and that's okay.
Exactly, right.
And that's
what they're
very,
thinking.
Very, yeah, and it's extremely, extremely dangerous because what you don't hear about is that we still lose clients. The medications don't work for everybody. I think of a client that we lost last year, a 26-year-old woman. She left a 6-year-old son. And those stories aren't on the news. People aren't hearing about those. And those are the things that are very important. And Kay mentioned some of the changes in her life and the things she had to give up. And I think for youth, it's so important for them to hear that. And it's so important for us to be talking about HIV and AIDS.
Do you do a lot of outreach work in the high schools?
We do. We have a program, as Kay mentioned, where we send individuals who are HIV positive out into schools, colleges. We'll go into places of employment, large hotels, especially now where we are seeing large numbers of Latino laborers and workers, whether it's in a hotel or a restaurant. And so if we're able to get in and speak to them as a group, we're finding that's just being, you know, an incredibly effective way of doing it. Also, what happens annually is National Latino AIDS Awareness Day, October 15th every year. And we do a community health fair within the Latino community where we talk about HIV and AIDS, and we provide testing.
And you know, I think it must be like a catch-22 there within the Latino community, because first of all, you have a number of men who are who would never publicly want anybody to know they're, you know, having sex with men. And so why would they, you know, try to protect their wives, you know, because that might be a clue. I mean, I would think it'd be a really messy situation
through. Yeah, and culturally also, for a woman to be carrying condoms is not appropriate. Culturally, she must be a prostitute or something. And
mm-hmm.
so that's a cultural barrier that we also need to break through. But one
mm-hmm.
of the things we've tried to do in normalizing HIV testing is at this community health fair, the first couple of years that we had it, we you know, as with our testing we were doing back then, we put it off to the side, very discreet, so that people could come in to receive their testing, and it was not out there in front. And about 3 years into it, we thought, well, what are we doing? You know, are we helping in the stigmatization of HIV testing? Let's
exactly.
put it right there next to blood pressure and glaucoma and see what happens. Well,
mm-hmm.
people went from one booth to the next and went right for their HIV test.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the more we can normalize it and get it out there, the more we're finding people are willing to get that test or willing to find out their status.
Mm-hmm. So, are you getting any teenagers coming in?
We do have, unfortunately, teenagers that we are seeing. And there's some real challenges with teenagers. Some who maybe are not newly infected, but were infected prenatally during birth. And today, those teenagers are 16, 17, 18, 20 years old. And
mm-hmm.
so they're dealing with a whole set of issues that, you know, we haven't had to deal with before. They're dealing with, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends, dating,
all of
that, and the stigma and disclosing their status. And so what we're finding is a lot of times they're withdrawing, they're isolating, dropping out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And so the parents or guardians or caretakers also are needing a whole set of needs there on how to deal with this and how to help the child through this period. So that's one of the things that we're also now finding we're needing to focus on and really look at those needs and what we can do to address those.
So, Kay, let me ask you this question. Now that
mm-hmm.
it's how many years since you've been diagnosed?
20 years.
Which is 20 years, which is just a wonderful, wonderful, you know, thing to be able to say that you're feeling good and you're living a full life. So, I mean, people tell me today, and maybe you can tell me if you feel this way. I know I have a number of friends who have HIV, and, you know, they kind of look at it like, you know, I have diabetes, they have HIV. You know, it's like a chronic, you know, illness, but you live with it. So is that kind of how you look at it?
Right, I do. It's chronic, and I have to maintain it. I have to take my pills every morning, my pills every night. But I'm not worried about taking the medicine because I know it's going to keep me healthy and keep my viral load low. And as Phil said, the lower my viral load is, the less infectious that I am. So my viral load is undetectable. It doesn't mean I don't have it. It just means my viral load is very low, which makes it safer actually to have sex with somebody when your viral load is low and you're less infectious. And I also
mm-hmm.
just wanted to mention in the women's support groups that I've been in, I've met women as young as 12 and as old as 80. So it doesn't discriminate age. Women are getting it in the rest homes as well because sex is still going on there and there are people that are infected there. So it's everywhere.
Isn't that amazing? I read about that with senior citizens, you know, now being a population that they're looking at with HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
And that was quite shocking to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
But are there any other tips that you would like to give women, what they should be looking for? Are there any signs, symptoms?
I didn't really have the symptoms I had, which are very common with a lot of women. I had a lot of yeast infections,
mm-hmm.
Like maybe for a year before I was diagnosed. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the HIV diagnosis, but it could be one of the symptoms of your immune system being lowered. So that was the only one that I had. But I think if anybody is having unprotected sex, they need to go get tested.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if your husband's not having sex with you, there may be a reason.
Yeah, and I tell my women, the women who come to me, if your husband's not having sex with you, that could really be a blessing. But here's another question that I don't know if that's, you know, there's always some misinformation about this. How long does it take before you can diagnose AIDS? In other words, you know, if a woman has to test 6 months, you know, after, you know, the last time she had sex with her husband, how often does she have to be tested?
Phil, I'll let you answer that one.
Yes. There's what is called the window period. And
mm-hmm.
what CDC uses for that window period right now is 2 months.
Okay.
And so when we have somebody come in for an HIV test, we explain to them that at this time the antibodies, there is no presence of antibodies in their system. However, if they had been infected within the last 2 months, they may not have showed up yet. So they need to be extremely safe, protect themselves for the next 2 months, and then come back in for a follow-up test.
Right. But if it's been a year, like, they don't have to worry, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, because I don't know if there was ever, you know, like I say, when through the early years of this, what they said, how often you had to get checked, and then get checed again in 2 years and 5 years. That it could be their best spring for years, but that's not the case. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's 2 months, and some even say that's a even conservative, that it could be possibly as short as 3 weeks, but just to be safe, it's best to go with a 2 month figure.
Now, did that change, Phil?
Pardon me?
Did that change over time, too?
Yeah, in the beginning, you know, nobody was really sure what was going on and how it was being spread and how long the virus could stay in the system. And
mm-hmm.
Les, are you referring to a diagnosis of AIDS or just to HIV?
No, just for HIV.
Yeah.
Now, does AIDS have to be HIV before it becomes AIDS?
Yes. AIDS is the condition that results from HIV infection, bringing the immune system down. Yes.
Right, but someone who gets infected would have AIDS first, is that correct? HIV first, and then the HIV turns into AIDS after your T-cell count goes up beyond 500. I don't know if that's the same measurement.
Yeah, it's actually below 200 and one opportunistic infection.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is there are people now who have been HIV positive, living for years HIV positive and never developing an AIDS diagnosis.
I know. Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful, yes.
Now, maybe you know the answer to this also, that through the years, let's say in the last 10, 15 years, with the medication, I know that in the early years it was just AZT, and then they started the regimen of different cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that over the years those changed as well, because they would say that you'd be on one for a while and then your body would become immune, so they'd try another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were always worried they'd be at the end of the line, you know. So has that changed also?
Are people pretty stabilized? Right. And where the changes come in on multiple levels, not only improvements in the medications, but in testing, what we can do now are types of tests called genotype and phenotype testing, where they can take the sample of your blood and the virus in your system and do some pre-work to determine which strain of the virus it is and which medications will be most effective and which medications aren't going to work. So instead
mm-hmm.
of going through months and months of trial and error trying to find the right combinations of medications, they can now attack it very specifically. And also the medications have gone from, you know, 20, 30 pills a day down to some as few as 1 to 2 pills a day.
Wow.
So incredible improvement in both the potency and strength and effectiveness of the medication,
mm-hmm.
and then also the dosing.
Okay, the medication that you currently take, have you been on that regimen for a while?
Yes, I've been really lucky. I haven't had to change medication very long, and I don't know if that's because I'm very regular in taking my medication or I'm just one of the lucky people who can handle my medication. I'm on a cocktail called
mm-hmm.
Luxtina and Truvada. So
mm-hmm.
I take three pills in the morning, two at night, and I have no side effects, luckily. Some people do get side effects with the medication, but I have none, so I'm very, very lucky and blessed.
Were you taking medication prior to that combination?
Yes,
I
was.
Was it a different combination that you were taking before?
Yes, I've been through two different cocktails only, not too many, so I'm lucky because first it was just AZT, then it was AZT and Viadex, which was a pill that you had to chew, but they don't even use that anymore. So I'm on a pretty good cocktail right now for me, but everybody's body's different. So
mm-hmm.
everybody I know is actually on a different cocktail. No one's on the exact same cocktail that I am that I've met specifically. So we all have our different cocktails that work for our bodies.
And how often do you have to get tested as far as checking out, you know, viral loads?
Every 3 months I have to have my blood work done to test my viral load and my T cell count.
So have you seen any changes in it over the last, let's say, 3 years?
No, I haven't. I am just blessed. I've had about a 600 T-cell count from 20 years ago till now. It fluctuates a little bit
mm-hmm.
between 600, 800, sometimes 900, but I stay at that level. I've never dropped below the AIDS diagnosis, which still says is 200.
So I was wondering if you could explain this if possible. If Kay is saying that her viral load is 600
mm-hmm.
and it's some, you know, under control because of the medication, is she still more susceptible to getting other kinds of illnesses?
Well, as far as the opportunistic infections
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we remember from the years past, those are not going to be appearing with a healthy immune system like that. But one of the other things that they're keeping a real close eye on are side effects from long-term use of the medication. And what
right.
some people are experiencing is early onset of diabetes,
right.
Kidney and liver issues,
mm-hmm.
bone loss. A lot of folks have had hip replacements due to long-term medications, and a lot of those were folks that were on the older medications that were much more harmful to the systems. So
even I know somebody who has like a hump on his neck.
Right.
They said that's from it also, from the long-term medication.
Yes, yes, the lipodystrophy.
Right.
Yeah.
But even so, even though there are some effects, I mean, would it be more so because of the low immune system? Or just because of the long-term medication could have toxicity to it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Yeah, I mean, if people are having, you know, reactions from the medication, would you say that's more due to long-term taking of toxic type of medications or just because their immune system in general has been lowered?
You know, I don't know if they're clear on that yet. I haven't read anything or seen anything that's where they've been able to determine that.
Mhm. So overall, though, have you seen a better quality of life of people, let's say, since you started there?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because I've been there for 18 years, when I first started there, we lost about 30 to 35 clients a month.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody dreaded Monday mornings and having to listen to your voicemail and hear about who had passed away over the weekend. And it was we were in a state of trying to help people die with dignity and die with respect, and it's completely a different mission now for the organization. our mission now is to, number one, prevent the spread of HIV. And secondly, for individuals who are living with HIV, is to connect them with the medical care that they need and the other support services they need to return to self-sufficiency and to be able to live a healthy, happy life. And that is our goal. And there's some work to be done in getting people to that point. So that's really the shift now.
So, as we're wrapping up tonight, can you give us just some advice, both of you, on what would you tell women who are suspicious or know that their husbands are having sex with men? You know, or even if they haven't proven it yet, like in your case, Kay, like you really had no idea, or you have ex who's in total denial. But if they suspect anything, because I always tell, I always say that women don't suspect this of straight men. I always tell women, trust your instincts because they're not going to lead you wrong. So even if your husband's in denial and you think intuitively that he's having sex with men, what's your best advice?
Well, my best advice is, I think you mentioned this in one of your newsletters too, if you think he's having sex with men, he probably is, because that's not a normal thought. If you're just dating a guy, that he's having sex with men, that's not a normal woman's thought. So if you think it is probably happening, and my only advice is just take care of yourself, because you're the most important person, and go and get tested and know for sure, and then get a test 2 months later and make sure you're not in that window period, because you need to protect yourself first, and that's really what matters most.
And Kay, I think you would also tell men who are listening to our show, because we have some male gay listeners also who are married, that if you are in that situation, you really need to also be tested and not think about having unsafe sex, with the woman who you're with, correct?
Yes, and I would like to say, for the men who are listening and if your wife doesn't know, please have the courage to tell her. You could save her life.
Absolutely. As difficult as it is, if you truly love a woman, that's what you do owe her. You do owe her the truth.
Yes,
and Phil, if people want to get in touch with your agency, if they live in the Orange County area, how can they do it?
They can reach us. They can either phone our office at 949-809-5700, or we're on the web at www.ocasf.org.
And maybe if it's okay with you, Phil, I'll drop you a note, because if we can add you as a link to my resources for women. That
Absolutely.
Would be great, if it would be okay with you.
Absolutely, I would be more than happy.
For any women who may not have gotten Phil's information, just write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the link. And I'm really sorry we didn't get Nancy on here with us tonight.
Me too. I'm so sorry, but it's very nice talking to you, Bonnie. I know I've read your letters, and I've been reading your newsletters probably for, 10 years now, as long as you've had them?
Yes.
And I thank you for being there for all of us women, because without you, I was lost. I remember the first day I found you, and I'm just so thankful that you're there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kay, and you've been a total inspiration to me for the last 10 years of how women can really beat any odds. I mean, you are certainly the person who can be an inspiration to all of us, and I greatly appreciate it. And Phil, I appreciate so much your coming on the program. I do want to tell you this, Phil, that when Kay sent me the website, and I looked you up, you're a very handsome man.
Thank you very much.
So I think that if people are in Orange County, they should just go there to see you. I mean, if I was coming to Orange County, I know where I would be visiting. But
thank you, Bonnie, and I want to thank you.
But Kay told me that as remarkable as handsome and good as you are, as good as you are, she's just in such awe of all the work that you've done. And I will tell him that, Kay, because you always speak so highly about the work that Phil does.
So
I thank you for inspiring people. All right, and I'll be in touch with you, Phil, to get your information for our link. Kay, thank you so much. And Misty, did you want to say goodnight to them?
Yes, I just really appreciate the work that they're putting into this world, especially you, Phil. Thank you for that work you do. I can't imagine how hard that is every day. People need you and the job and services that you deliver, so I thank you for the work you do.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
All right, and thanks so much for being our guest tonight.
Thank you.
And hopefully, if you don't mind, we'd love to do this awareness show like every, you know, 4 or 5 months. If it's okay with you, come back as our guest.
Terrific.
Sure, it'd be great.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon then.
Thank
all
you
right,
good
night, Bonnie.
Good night to both of you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, Misty, wasn't that wonderful?
Wow, what an inspiration. I'm sitting here with my mouth still open and hardly have words to say how inspiring Kay, she's just such an inspiring person. How could you not feel inspired after listening to her talk? You know, she's just so upbeat, so cheerful, and wow.
And you know what? I've had the opportunity to actually meet her. I guess you'd put a little funny saying that. But what a beautiful woman she is. Just beautiful.
Absolutely.
I mean, physically, she's a model. She's that beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, she's more beautiful. Mentally, everything. She just has everything. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person.
Mm.
So I think it's wonderful that they were willing to share that with us tonight.
Absolutely. There's so many people that need that information. You know, people look so healthy sometimes, and I tell people, you know, it's just HIV and AIDS does not discriminate. I think tonight we've learned that more, you know. So it's so important, the work that both of them are doing, the inspiration she puts out there for people living with HIV and the work he's doing to help all those people that encounter and need help that discover that they have HIV or AIDS. It's, wow, what great two people.
But I think that if any lessons to be learned from this, it's that it's better to know than not to know. Because if you catch this early, no matter how devastating it will be, at least you can get on medication where you can lead a relatively normal, if you can call it normal life, you know, as far as having to deal with it, but, you know, a healthy life, I'll put it to you that way. And I know so many long-term survivors at this point, people have had AIDS for, you know, 8, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and they're really doing so well. Where
mm-hmm.
it was so depressing, like I said, back in the 80s when I would have women calling me and dying, I was just too heartbroken to keep doing it. You know, it was one call after another, and they were just getting infected and dying. So thankfully, you know, there is help, there's treatment, there's support groups. And that's why, you know, I think whatever, you know, ASF is doing, they're doing a wonderful job as far as being there to give support to people. You know, if you're in the Orange County area or anywhere near the Orange County area, there's lots of support that you can get. But if you're not, there's groups all over the country. And the important thing is just to get the help, not to feel that you can't go and you can't get it done and you're afraid to know. I think fear is a really great factor, and I don't blame women for being afraid to find out. I really don't. If you're one of those women, you know, who are just afraid to find out, trust me, I'm not calling you stupid or ridiculous. I'm just saying you need to find out, because if you find out, you know, even with the worst scenario, you can get help early in the game and save yourself. You know, for you and for your children, you need to do that. So I think that's the lesson that we've learned. And also, if you suspect that your husband is having sex with men in any way, do not have unprotected sex with him. Right, Misty?
Absolutely. I tell women that all the time. If you even dare suspect, you have to use protection. And birth control pills, I'm not speaking of that type of protection in terms of unwanted pregnancies. I'm speaking of protection against any STDs. And it's you have to use it. I mean, it's just, you have to. There's really not a choice unless you're, you know, you're just flirting with disaster, you're playing Russian roulette, whatever you want to call it. You just really have to use protection.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important.
Well, I think those are important words. I just want to discuss a couple other things before we go. I was sent a really interesting article. If anybody would like it, I sent it out to the women in my chat room. And I thought it was very interesting. It was a blog from a man, and let me just get the correct information before I misquote anything. It's his blog, Michael Anorfo, Coming Out in Midlife. And he has a blog for gay people, and, you know, he's promoted my new book with Doug, Over the Cliff. And I guess Doug just sent me a link to it, and to his new blog, and I thought this was very interesting. And it says that research has suggested that men in mixed orientation marriages, well, that's what they call straight gay marriages, you know, according to some people, remain just as gay in orientation. and it gives all the different sources where this comes from. But I thought what was interesting is that it says that they did a survey of 106 husbands and 161 wives in these kind of mixed marriages.
Mm-hmm.
The men had an average age of 45 and had been married 16 years. Conservative Christian therapist Warren Throckmorton summarizes the findings for us. It says, the data demonstrates that the Kinsey scores shift more toward the heterosexual side when the participants were asked about their sexual behavior, but when asked about their attractions, fantasies, and emotional attachments, there was no change. So it says the Kinsey expanded scale, including an average of participant Kinsey assessment of behavior attractions, fantasies, and emotional attachments. At any rate, the results were consistent with what I am finding as well. People adapt their behavior to their beliefs and commitments, but their orientation does not shift on average. And it says sexual orientation cannot be made to change, but behavior can. So mm-hmm. I thought that's really true. I mean, people can act straight, but it doesn't mean that that changes what their sexual orientation is.
Mm-hmm.
Behaviors can change. You can try to behave like you're a straight person, but your sexual orientation is still gay. And I think that most of the men who marry us, you know, that's the situation. They're living in a straight-oriented world, but they want gay sex.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just thought that was an interesting article, and if anybody would like that, they can write to me at bondk@AOL. Well, we just want to, Misty, when's your workshop coming up?
Oh, wow, I think it's August the 20th, and it's free. It's going to be for 1 hour on a Saturday, and it's going to be very informative. One of the greatest things that come about, one of the first things that you'll go through when you realize that you are a straight wife is a grieving process. It's pretty traumatic to learn or discover that your husband or partner is gay. So that's the grieving process is one of the most important things you can learn about during this process of recovery. And that's what I'm going to go over is the grieving process, the stages, you know, what to expect, what are some things that are normal, what are some things that, you know, possibly would not be normal, you know, that you need to seek additional help for. So that's what that whole seminar is going to be about, is the grieving process. It's something that you can learn throughout your whole healing journey, something you can learn to use, because it truly is a grieving process. You know,
and this workshop is Misty's gift to you. And so it is a free workshop, but it has limited seating only. So if you're interested, you can write to Misty. Right, Misty?
Yes, absolutely. You can. My email is MistyLynnHall@AOL.com and my STILYNNHALL@AOL.com. And you can request the spot for that, and I will put you on the list.
Right. It's a wonderful opportunity to literally talk with people, kind of meet them by phone, correct? They do that by telephone?
Absolutely. It's the comfort of your own home, or you know, you can use your cell phone, your own private area. You'll call into a number. You'll hear the seminar through me. And then at the end, I always connect, you know, leave the lines open for questions and connections of other people. There's always, it's always a good experience.
And people can remain as anonymous as you choose to be. You don't have
Absolutely.
To use your real name. No one has to even know that you're making
calls.
That call, right?
Exactly. You send me an email with the name that you'll be using, and that's it. You know, people don't know where you're calling from. You call into a number, and it can be as anonymous as you choose for it to be. You know, of course, if you want to share where you're from and who you are and name, you absolutely can do that as well. But that's never required. Most people use their first name only, or some people use their middle name. They go by their middle name on the conference calls, which I find that can be helpful for a lot of people because it's hard to come out of the closet. You know, it really is. You know, the straight wife certainly comes in the closet too, so it's not an easy process. So, you know, you can absolutely make up a name, use your middle name, just email me, and I'll get you set up for the conference.
All right, that's great news. So write to Misty at MistyLynnHall@AOL.com, or you can send me a note at BondK@AOL, and I'll forward it to Misty. And the only other thing I wanted to remind people about is I'm getting ready for my September get-together here in Philadelphia. So if any of you would like information, it seems like there's a nice lineup of women coming in from around the country. Just write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll send you information. So, Misty, I think we had a wonderful show with wonderful guests.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to thank Kay again and Phil Yeager.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just wonderful that there is support for women out there who are going through this, and for men as well. If you're a man who thinks, you know, there's any chance of infection, just get in touch with me if you need help on where to go. And I'm more than happy to give you that support. And I hope you have a wonderful week, Misty. I hope it gets a little cooler in Florida with the chances of that happening.
If you can hear my dog, he's saying hello, too. I'm so sorry. I guess he's still left out.
Your dog's saying it's too hot in Florida, Misty.
It's too hot. We got to go north. That's what I'm saying.
Your dog's saying go to Philadelphia.
Yes, go be with Bonnie.
It's cooler.
It is. So, anyway, I guess he's saying good night and love to all. He's going to
say.
All
right, good night, everybody. We'll be back here next week. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.